Today, we're talking about securing AI, which is obviously an incredibly important topic for every business and organization in the world right now. Joining me for this really important conversation is Chris Novak. Chris is the head of cybersecurity consulting at Verizon, and Louise McGrath. Louise is the head of industry development and policy at the AI Group. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Barry.
Louise, I might start with asking you, can you give us an understanding of what the profile of your members are? This is a really interesting group of Australian companies that really are the engine room of the economy. If you can just paint us a picture, who are your members and what is their general profile?
Thanks. Well, the Australian Industry Group is a national industry association in Australia representing a wide range of industrial companies. We're 150 years old, which makes us laugh since we're now shortened to AI Group, which is quite pertinent to the topic. And our history is in actually metals manufacturing. But as the Australian economy has evolved, so has our membership. And now it's quite expansive in the whole industrial sector, including engineering, construction, defence, clean energy, food and beverage, you know, right across. So when we think about what our members need to understand around AI and cyber, it's very much a day-to-day concern. They're looking to remain internationally competitive, keeping up, but also, you can imagine, in that sort of industrial sector, productivity is key. And so how can they reduce costs, improve their productivity, improve their international standing, while also doing it safely?
Chris, I might just ask you to credential yourself for a second. You've got a truly global role and have a real picture of the global landscape from a cyber and I guess now AI perspective.
Yeah, so I lead a team at Verizon that specifically touches on things like cybersecurity consulting, but Verizon's remit's even broader than just consulting in terms of all sorts of managed security services and the such. And handling everything from detection and response to looking at secure connectivity at a kind of higher level. Verizon is a large global ISP in the United States. We're a large wireless provider. And so we have kind of an extensive network of connectivity that one, we're looking to, you know, how it is that we enable everything. But then also from my team's perspective, how it is that we layer on security to ensure that everyone's commerce, communication, and et cetera can be done with kind of confidence and trust. And then how do we help organizations where they may feel like they're experiencing a challenge or they're trying to address a compliance or a risk mitigation need, for example? How can we help them address those kinds of concerns? And then in the unfortunate circumstance where an organization may believe they've, you know, suffered a breach or they're under attack, they often will reach out to us and say, you know, can you help us, you know, mitigate this breach and recover from it and try to figure out how they make sure that their organization is properly secured so it doesn't happen again in the future.
Louise, talking about your members, you gave us a broad brush of what they look like. The profile of your membership seems to be like a hotly kind of discussed in terms of their experience. Lots of assumptions are made about their maturity, how they're keeping up with technology, whether it's cyber or AI, or lots of impact of prices on things like energy, etc. Can you just paint us a picture? And also referring to your cyber report, what is their maturity? What is their general profile? What is it that they're grappling with right now?
So our larger members have made the investments, do consider themselves quite mature in cybersecurity. You know, in Australia, we've got the benefit of the Essential Eight, which is really driven home across a lot of companies. They understand what they need to do. And so they feel quite comfortable that they're complying with that. The very small companies, you could say, are not particularly mature. They're not making the right investments, mainly because their IT staff are outsourced. So they're not in-house, and so they don't understand. The mid-sized companies, they are probably the most concerned. So while generally it's been a mainstream business issue, they realize that they've got data that they need to protect. And also they're a part of those larger supply chains, which they have obligations then to their customers. But they don't necessarily have the in-house knowledge. They don't have the experience. They don't have the resources to feel comfortable or confident that they've got all their cybersecurity measures in place. I mean, a few of them have said to me, well, if I spend an extra $1 million, am I an extra $1 million safer? That's always the question. You know, what's the limit? One good thing, though, that I do think is that there is a greater understanding now that it's actually about people more than technology. So while there's a whole range of technological solutions, a lot more work is being done on staff training.
Chris, we're going to come back to like the AI adoption piece in a minute, Louise, but So Chris, maybe from you, when we're talking about companies like manufacturing companies, SMEs, those types of industries, what are you seeing globally, first from a cyber perspective, and now that there's a better understanding of the benefits from an AI perspective, how those two things are sitting together?
Sure.
Is the maturity of cyber reflecting the maturity of AI adoption where it can add value to organizations? What does the global view look like?
Yeah, so it's interesting. And actually, I wanted to add on to maybe a little bit of what Luis was saying there in terms of the kind of quantification of things like dollars spent to risk reduction. I'd say that's a question that we're starting to see pop up more and more often. And actually in the sectors that you described, where now I think we're at a point of maturity as a cybersecurity industry where we're actually getting better at being able to say, how do we quantify risk in terms of dollars and cents? And then how do we take that quantification and potentially use that to drive the right security actions, the right budget, the right maturity of our programs? Because historically, that's been a really difficult thing to do. And now I think that we have more data. And then also, actually, believe it or not, AI has actually played a role in this. One of the very platforms and tools that we've used to help do things like cyber risk quantification leverages generative AI in terms of doing various degrees of modeling around risk quantification, so that a CISO can actually look at their organization and say, I have this plethora of assets, applications, data, OT, IoT. And then based on that, they can actually get a sense of modeling what their risk looks like and say, okay, if we spend X dollars to address these or implement these kind of controls, we can actually see where that would bring down risk. And we can actually show you that the risk has been reduced by some multiplier of the spend. So they can kind of get a sense of what the return on investment is. And so it's just kind of serendipitous that it turns out that the platform we use is actually leveraging generative AI to pull in these massive amounts of data to do that risk quantification type of analysis.
I think that that will be really essential for a lot of our members, because before AI was the buzzword, Industry 4 was, and, you know, driving a lot of companies to digitalize their production. We do a lot of work showcasing lived experience for our members, and we had a case study of one member who had a ransomware attack, had completely digitalized their whole business, could not turn a machine on, and all the fallout of that. In doing that work, we discovered that there are companies now who are disabling the IoT elements of their machinery because they couldn't guarantee the cybersecurity risk. And I think once we give people confidence, then there's a whole plethora of benefits that they can then embrace the technology.
It's interesting you're saying that people are going slowly before they can confidently go forward. I guess that kind of tension point between risk and benefit, that discussion, I always feel like the cyber discussion has been going on for a long time. And then you lay AI and there's much more kind of pointed discussions happening in a very shorter time frame, because I think everyone, whether you're in a business or an individual, is acutely aware of the risks to benefit. So just talking, we've talked a little bit about cyber. So Louise, what are the AI applications that organizations that, you know, you represent are looking at? And what are they weighing up from that risk to benefit perspective?
Well, as I said, it's our job to really help our members understand the future and be ready for it. So we're working with the National Science Agency, CSIRO, and their National AI Center to showcase all sorts of different applications on AIs. Because my real concern is a lot of our members will think, oh, is AI just ChatGPT and how does that apply to my business? So we want real examples. We kicked off with safety, so working with our safety officers in Australia. As you know, safety is a big driver of a lot of business decisions because, you know, directors can go to jail. At the moment, directors don't get to go to jail if they don't use AI. The motivation is there. So we showcased, you know, workshops around the country demonstrating all different ways of AI applications to improve safety, whether it's augmented reality, goggles, practicing chemical spills, hazard identification, monitoring driver fatigue. Some of this is really quite old technology, but just to show all the different ways. The reason why we chose safety as the first one is because, one, as I said, the business case is basically written. Two, the safety thing, it touches everyone in the organization. So it's a good way to practice getting everyone across AI. And three, it doesn't affect production, so it's a bit more secure. So now we're driving this program on a range of these narrow topics. So we've done using generative AI for your own data or proprietary data, using AI for carbon reporting and other climate-related activities. So just really driving home that there are real opportunities to use it in discrete areas of the business.
Chris, does that marry with what you're seeing globally?
Yeah, I would say that that matches up quite closely in terms of what we see. I see there's a lot of interest and adoption as it relates to kind of AI broad-based. And I think it's interesting, you know, we put together something called our Data Breach Investigations Report every year. We've been doing it now for 17 years. And, you know, we've started to look at what does the risk and the threat landscape look like and how or does it differ now that we've seen this kind of culmination and shift towards more of an AI-driven landscape. I think it was interesting. I liked what Louise said about, you know, directors might be able to go to jail for safety issues, but they don't necessarily go to jail for not using AI. And I think we're starting to see organizations also being, I don't know if I want to say, almost kind of pushed into using it. They feel like competitively, they almost have to, even if they don't need to, because they feel like everyone else is saying they're doing it. I don't know how many trade show conferences I've been to lately, irrespective of whether or not AI actually plays a meaningful role in that industry. I swear that probably half the booths are advertising whatever it is that that company does, they're doing it now with AI. And so I think it's kind of almost like if you think back, wow, 20 plus years of the .com, you know, companies' stock went up just because they changed the name of the company to be whatever it is, .com. And I kind of feel like we're seeing that now with AI, whether AI makes whatever someone does better or there's any noticeable improvement, just saying AI tends to give them a boost. And I think there's a concern there also that organizations may be over-indexing a bit on it and looking at it as kind of the panacea. Well, if we can't solve a hard problem, well, let's just put AI on the job as if it was the cure-all. But a lot of organizations we see really struggle with any kind of, I would say, mature understanding of actually how to leverage it. It's not just a plug it in and turn it on kind of, you know, appliance. And there's obviously also a lot of risks and vulnerabilities that can come from it. I kind of think back to the early days, going back to that .com analogy, where a lot of what we see today as it relates to the data breach and the compromise and the cyber attack landscape really started back then, not because of .com, but because everyone raced to say I needed to be a part of it because otherwise I'd be left behind. And security and privacy were like the last things that anyone thought of if they thought about it at all.
Louise, locally, there's a lot of discussion about the regulatory environment, responsible AI, that kind of policy space will be a big part of your role. Chris is talking about that kind of self-regulation piece and understanding the risks and benefits. Where do you see the role of government in terms of setting these kind of frameworks and, I guess, safety nets around the way that AI is regulated and what organizations are doing by understanding their own landscape?
Well, because AI Group is such a broad-based industry association, as always, on any topic, we have a range of opinions. You know, we've got members who are just gung-ho saying, you know, just let us go, let us add it and we'll work it out later. And then we've got others saying, well, we used to think asbestos was safe. I do not want to be using this technology unless I know I've got guardrails and I'm using it responsibly. And I think there's that tension. And we are used to, in Australia, our government sort of making sure we keep people safe. The main conversation I'm having with members, though, is human agency. You know, who is responsible for any outcomes? And you can see the Europeans have tried with their legislation to determine, you know, who is the builder of AI compared to the user of AI. I understand that it's not having that same Brussels effect that cybersecurity and privacy has had globally. You know, if we look at what governments are doing in Asia, they're not following that model. And I think Australia is probably more aligned to that Asian model of, you know, there is still responsibility for those who are using the AI as well as those who are building it, but it's not a clear cut. The argument we always make in our advocacy is that there are already regulations that govern a lot of the fear that people have around AI, whether it is around discrimination in employment, discrimination in decision-making, false and misleading advertising. These regulations have been in place for some time, and we should be focusing on really, what is the behavior we're trying to regulate rather than the technology? As I regularly say, if you're lying to a customer, it doesn't matter if you're standing on a snake oil box, using a fax machine or using AI. The fact is, lying to the customer is still illegal under Australian regulation.
Just a couple of things. One, just understanding the data that you have now, where people are really looking at data much more closely because they're understanding what the value looks like from an AI perspective. Is that reframing the way that people are looking from a cyber perspective? Like, oh, that has personally identifiable information, or is it actually creating a level of awareness that's sort of boosting that kind of cyber awareness?
So I would say it is slow, but it is there. I would say what we're seeing a lot more organizations kind of starting to lean into is a notion or an understanding of what responsible AI should be. So in fact, one of the things we've done is actually publish our responsible AI agenda on our website so that people can kind of see what Verizon is doing with respect to AI. But also I think having an internal governance model is something that is still new on a lot of people's radar, because I think a lot of people don't even fully understand all of the ways that AI might be able to, I don't know if I want to say, lead them astray or not necessarily make things better. It's actually interesting, as we've done a lot of analysis, what we've actually found is that for many organizations, their biggest risk of AI is actually probably internal to their organization. It's the people within their organization either misusing the tools. And in many cases, it's not malicious. It's not that they're out to cause a problem. It's just they don't necessarily know the right way to do it, or they're unaware of all of the possibilities and pitfalls of how it could be used incorrectly, or they just trust the outputs or the outcome of it. And as a result, it can lead them down an inappropriate or incorrect path, or a path that's not aligned with the business's, say, ethical values or kind of moral compass, if you will. And so we see a lot of things like that that typically emerge from an AI perspective. We're doing a lot of, like I said, kind of helping organizations build an AI governance model that might help them address things like misinformation and disinformation, the privacy and security implications, because typically these platforms have access to a lot of information. And there is a notion, it's kind of interesting to see how things have changed over time. In the early days, we used to see organizations were amassing large quantities of data because they could use it for better marketing purposes, kind of understand customer behaviors better, you know, do more targeted marketing towards them. And then we saw more breaches happening, and organizations started realizing, ooh, maybe not all of this data is necessary. Maybe we're holding on to more data than we should. We started seeing more data privacy and data sovereignty things emerge. And so organizations started kind of trying to implement more data retention policies and get rid of things that they didn't necessarily need. And now with things like AI and generative AI, we're back to, let's hold on to more data. Let's get even more data because it might allow us to produce even, you know, more or better outcomes. And then also addressing things like bias and fairness, copyright infringements, another one, because AI may lead you down all sorts of paths that may actually infringe on someone else's copyright based on like a derivative work product. Then also there is the potential for attacks against your own AI infrastructure. So the fact that, you know, just because you have something internally that allows you to do these new and interesting things doesn't necessarily mean you've put the right safeguards and controls to protect it. So what if someone could attack that infrastructure and influence what it produces or the way that it operates? And then some of the other ones that I would say are of concern are things like hallucinations. Some of these have actually been fairly widely publicized, where AI will produce something that is not necessarily grounded on any kind of fact or truth. But like I said, people will often run with it, and as a result, it can lead them down an inappropriate path. And then obviously, there's also the concern around shadow AI. You know, in other words, if you don't implement anything at all, might your organization kind of take it upon themselves?
The final question, which ties into a lot of what you've just said, Chris, it reframes the way we look at skills in the future. So it wasn't very long ago that it was about data scientists, and data scientists as a premium. And now we have people who are able to kind of harness these incredible engines with a kind of sophisticated view or a less sophisticated view. And what is the skills landscape required of the future, even in terms of questioning a hallucination? Like, that requires someone to be able to look with a really critical eye that takes some experience. So I'm really keen to kind of get a sense of what do we need to build from a skills perspective?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot there. I think one, not everyone is going to be ready for it. So I think one, there the background around the data science and the understanding of actually how the AI infrastructure works, I think is critical. The data science elements and the prompt engineering elements are also important. And then equally an understanding of what are those kind of safeguards. You know, I mentioned a bunch of the risks, but it's important that an organization has safeguards in place to address those risks as they roll out this kind of infrastructure, whether it is intended just for internal use to drive internal HR chatbots or sales activity or things like that, or for external use where maybe interacts with the public or customers, having those safeguards built in. And then also another element of it is constant monitoring and vigilance, because the fact that they have the ability to generate all sorts of kind of on-the-fly content, there also needs to be additional testing and monitoring of what it's producing, as well as things like penetration testing and red teaming and other forms of assessments to look for potentially new and different vulnerabilities that maybe even yet today we have not discovered.
Louise, we're always talking about skills. We're always talking about how rare they are, how we upskill people. What are your members saying? Are they really looking at how they plan their workforce in the future?
Yes, members are worried equally in all those sort of areas that Chris mentioned. I think one area, though, that's sort of slightly missing in the conversation is management skills and leadership skills. Because as Chris identified, it's not a matter of just turning on the machine and hoping for the best. You really need a good strategy behind it. And I think that AI will really test a lot of management skills, not just in terms of strategy, but you'll be able to more easily identify when management is not actually required. So if data is coming up through the system, do you really need people there explaining it to the board? The other thing, you know, in speaking to the Australian Institute of Company Directors in Australia, the real risk for directors is they will just be swamped with data. And I really think they need to push back and say, well, no, what does this data actually mean? You know, what are you trying to tell me? So I think everyone in the organisation will be affected and will have to upskill.
Thank you to both of you. It's a fascinating conversation and you both bring a really important lens to the discussion. So thank you so much for your time. Chris Novak from Verizon and Louise McGrath from AI Group. Thank you to both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this special Verizon podcast. For more, keep tuning in to Innovation Oz podcast or go to verizon.com.